We will be starting with the Parashas Terumah, which is on page 444 in your stone chumash, if you have one. What I'd like to do this evening is to ask one basic question on Parashas Terumah, and then this Shabbos, as we know, is also Parashas Zachar, which we have a special reading Shabbos before Purim about remembering the Molek. So I'd like to talk a little bit about Parashas Zachar as well, and maybe throw in a little bit about Purim. So let's first begin Parashas Terumah, page 444. So Parashas Terumah is actually the beginning of a series of parashiyos that takes us all the way to the rest of Sefer Shemayis that talks about the Mishkan, about the sanctuary, the tabernacle, or sometimes it's called, whatever that means. We have, we'll just read maybe just the beginning of the passage just to get the start of it. It says, V'yadaber Hashem Moshe Lema, Hashem said to Moshe, saying, Daber al b'nei Yisrael, v'yikchu li terumah, speak to the children of Israel, let them take from me a portion, that's donations, me'ez kol esh asher yedven oliba tikvas trumasi, from every man whose heart motivates him, you shall take my portion. And then it lists, was also chumash, it's tikkum eitam, this is the portion, it's the zav, the chesim, the choshes, all sorts of expensive, precious or semi-precious materials, gold, silver, copper, turquoise, purple, scarlet wool, linen and goat hair, etc., etc. Throw stones, stones for the settings. And then finally, the pasuk says, what's the purpose of all of this? It says in the bottom of 444, Perek Chaf Hei Pasuk, Pasuk Ches 25:8, it says, Va'asuli mikdash v'shachanti b'solcham. They shall make a sanctuary for me so that I may dwell among them. The purpose was to make a mikdash, a sanctuary. What's a mikdash? What exactly is a sanctuary? Mikdash, it comes from the word kedusha, which is translated often as sanctity or holiness. Rashi here says a mikdash, he says a mikdash is a base kedusha. It's a house of holiness, a house of sanctity. So I think there's a very, just a fundamental question here exactly is, what exactly is this mikdash? What is a mikdash? What's the definition of a house of kedusha, a house of sanctity? What is it for? It seems to be such a central, essential factor in the setup of the Jewish people, it's given so much space here in the Torah. Possibly, I don't know. I didn't do a study about this, but perhaps it's even given more space. One single concept is given more space in the Torah, at least in the Chumash, than perhaps anything else. This idea of the Mishkan with so many details and repeated in so many different ways. Obviously, this is a really important bias, home, building, whatever it is that's being built. It has an extremely central function, and its function is described as mikdash, as it being a house of sanctity, a sanctuary. But I think that often we fail to appreciate exactly what the purpose. Maybe we have some idea, obviously, sometimes a too vague idea as to what the purpose of the mikdash of the Mishkan was, and the base of mikdash that we had afterwards takes that place, and perhaps the shuls and play, but the mesh we have today are taking that place to some extent. So let's try to understand what is it. What is a mikdash and why is it so important? Let's try to get an appreciation of that a little bit tonight. That's issue or question number one. Then I want to turn, now I want to turn to the reading of Parshas Zohar, which we're going to read this Shabbos as well. And if you have the Chumash, it's on page 1066, and the Parshas Kisetze. And I'll just read the first pasuk or two here. Zachar eis asher asa lecha Amalek. It's in Deuteronomy, Devarim 25:17, Perek Chaf Hei Pasuk Yud Zayin. Zachar eis asher asa lecha Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you. Aderech etzeischem imitzrayim. On the way when you were leaving Egypt. Asher korcha baderech. Way to translate this, we'll soon see the following Rashi, that he happened upon you on the way, and he struck those of you who were hindmost, when you were faint and exhausted, and he did not fear God. So there's a mitzvah here to remember what it is that Amalek did to us, that Amalek attacked us, when we were on the way, shortly after we left Egypt. And then, as we know, the pasuk continues and it says that there's a mitzvah that we're commanded to wipe out the memory of Amalek from under the heaven. So, obviously this, if someone thinks a little bit about this, it's difficult to understand what was so terrible that Amalek did. I don't even think if we look at the psukim where it describes the war with Amalek at the end of the Parshas Beshalach, which is the reading that we read on Purim, it doesn't even say anything about, at least clearly, about there being terrible casualties among the Jewish people. It says that Amalek waged war. And sometimes Amalek was stronger, sometimes Israel was stronger. It doesn't say that there were people killed. It's unclear if anyone was actually killed from the Jewish people at all. And so would seem that we've had worse enemies than Amalek. What did they do already? Okay, so they attacked. They attacked when we were it was unprovoked, and we were vulnerable because we were on the way and we were tired. It's true, but such a terrible thing, we have to remember this for all time. Every year we have a special mitzvah to come to shul or perhaps exactly what the mitzvah is not 100% clear. But this is what we do. When the Jewish people have a mitzvah that which we fulfill by listening to a special Torah reading about remembering what Amalek did and remembering that there's a mitzvah to destroy Amalek. And there's just the fact that there is a mitzvah to destroy Amalek. What is so terrible about what Amalek did? So obviously, we have to really look very carefully in the psukim and analyze every word here, because the pasuk itself is really saying what we're supposed to be remembering about Amalek, and presumably that's why it was so bad. But what I want to talk about just tonight is really just two words, or one word really. The pasuk says, pasuk Yud Ches, pasuk 18, it says, Asher Korcha Baderech. Asher Korcha, which again Otzkol translates that he happened upon you on the way. Rashi says, the word karcha is lashon mikre. It comes from the word mikre. Mikre is happenstance or something like that. So that's why Hanukkah translates it, that he happened upon you on the way. This is like one of the first things that it tells us, pretty much the first thing that it says. It says, remember what Amalek did on the road when he left out of Mitzrayim. Then it says, what was it that they did? They happened upon you, Asher Karcha. Why is that significant? What does it mean altogether? They happened upon you. So, and perhaps it means that it was, again, what it sounds like. It almost sounds like that it was not a premeditated act of war. I'm not sure, but if you just read it with what way it sounds, it seems like it's not that Amalek was planning to wage war with the Jewish people. They just happened upon you. Well, Amalek was traveling through the Midbar, and they happened upon the Jewish people, and they decided to attack. Is that what it is? I'm not sure. But if that's what it is, why is that important? You know, at least in secular American law, I believe a premeditated crime is considered more severe than a crime of impulse. Like premeditated murder, I think it's first degree murder, and then if it wasn't premeditated, it wasn't planned, the Jewish person got angry and beat someone up and they died. It's not quite as stringent. At least that's what I heard years ago. I don't know if that's still true today. We have to ask the lawyers, but certainly it would seem that it's not necessarily saying such a terrible thing. The fact that Amalek didn't plan this, but they just happened upon us on the way. If that's what it means, if that's not what it means, what does it mean? They happened upon you. They happened upon you on the way. What idea is the Torah telling us with this? So one other thing in relation to this, I want to point out, we may have mentioned this once in the past, that this idea of Karcha, of Amalek happening upon you, seems to be both from here, but there's another support that this is something very central about Amalek and what Amalek stood for. This idea of Karcha, because we find in the Megillas Esther, very interestingly, that when Mordechai was sending a message to Esther regarding to let Esther know about the decree that Haman and Achashverosh had made against the Jewish people, Mordechai, it says that what it says in the Megillas Esther now is, it says, if you want, you can look at it. It's on page 1256 in the stone Chumash in the back by the Megillas Esther. It says, Vayaged lo pasuk zayin over there, pasuk 7. Vayaged lo Mordechai. Mordechai told him, Hasach, who was sent by Esther to find out what was going on. Mordechai said to him, Eis kol asher karahu. Everything, all that had happened to him. Mordechai said, told him all that had happened to him. And our sages point out the word, why is the word karahu being used? Everything that happened to him? Because Mordechai told Esther that here is a resurgence of the Karahu man, the happenstance man. Who's that? Amalek. Asher Karcha Baderech. Amalek is rearing his ugly head once again. And how's Amalek described? As Karahu, the one who happens. How do we, so why is that so important, the fact that he just happens? So those are our questions for tonight. First question was on the parsha, what is the significance? It seems so important, the idea of the Mishkan, the sanctuary. So much space is given to it in the Torah. It's called a mikdash, a place of sanctity, of holiness. What is the function of the Mishkan and why is it so important? That was one question I wanted to get to. And then the second question is, okay, Amalek, we have to remember Amalek for all time. Amalek is going to be totally destroyed or wiped out. And what's the reason? The first thing the Torah says about Amalek, he happened upon us. What's so bad about that? And Haman is back, is on the scene, a descendant of Amalek. He's the happening. He's the descendant of the one who happens upon us. What is that all about? Those are the questions. So in order to begin trying to address them tonight, I want to go back to something we mentioned a couple of weeks ago. When we were learning Parshas Yisro, we spoke about the connection between Yisro and Amalek, and how the pasuk says that Yisro showed up. Vayishma Yisro, Yisro heard, and he decided to come and show up right after he heard what happened with Amalek. So last time we explained it a certain way, but tonight I want to share with you something from the Medrash that says a different light on this connection between Yisro coming and Amalek. The Medrash brings quotes of pasuk and Mishlei in Proverbs. The pasuk says, "Late take upesi yarim." Late take means you hit a late. This is an important word here today for tonight. A late is someone who scoffs at things, a scoffer, someone who makes light of everything. That's a late. Sometimes a late can be called a clown, or you know, someone who makes jokes is sometimes called a late. But really, and there's a place for jokes and a place for clowns actually, and sometimes we need someone to make light of things. But a late is actually usually has a negative connotation, who is someone who doesn't take things seriously, or more than just doesn't take them seriously, but he makes light of important and serious things. That's a late. We'll soon see more about that. So it says, so what the pasuk says, late take, you hit a late, yarim. And a pesi is someone who's also not a complimentary word, but a pesi is someone who's like a simpleton, a simple-minded person. Upesi yarim, and a simple person becomes smart. Lates take, you hit the lates, you hit the scoffer, and the simple person becomes smart. Says the Medrash that this pasuk is referring, referring to two people. The lates is Amalek, and the pesi, the scoffer is Amalek, and the pesi, the simpleton, is Yisro. And what the pasuk is saying is, lates take, you hit the lates. Amalek got hit. They got burnt. They got took a hit, but did they get smarter? They didn't get any smarter. You know who got smarter? Someone who's not a late, maybe a simple-minded person, not so sophisticated, but someone who's not a scoffer, who knows how to take things to heart, who knows how to take things seriously, and that's Yisro, and he's the one that got smart. So Yisro witnessed the lates, the scoffer Amalek being hit, and he's the one who learned the lesson from it. And from this medrash is telling us something very important, that there's a certain type of, there's a certain character trait, a certain type of way of looking at the world, that no matter what happens, the person with that character trait is never going to learn his lesson. Is never going to learn the lesson from anything. And that person is a late. A late is a scoffer. Someone who laughs off everything. Who makes light of everything. If someone tries to call his attention to the fact that he's barking up the wrong tree, that he's doing something wrong, that he may be getting himself into trouble, that person is in a mindset that I'm good, and everything is in a kind of a perverse way, it's all good. Meaning that this person is not able to focus on anything as being some important enough to jar him out of the mindset that he's got himself into. There's a mixture of, I think there's a certain arrogance to it also. This is the way I see things, and I'm not going, and anybody who tries to tell me something different, I'm just going to knock them right off. I'm going to blow them away. That's a certain scoffer. He makes light of anything and everything besides what that person himself looks at the world. And that's That's what Amalek was. Amalek was a late. The whole world was shook, was shaking up of the entire world. But when the Jewish people left Egypt, and when there was a splitting of the sea, like we describe in the Song of the Sea, that everybody sat up and paid attention, at least somewhat, because something was going on, and they all were looking at it. One second here, what's happening? Maybe there's something I need to know. There's something I need to see. I mean, immediately, like we spoke last time, they immediately went back and forgot about it a minute later. But at least for a moment, they were shaken up. And therefore, the people who are shaken up or are able to look at things and take them seriously, there's hope that maybe they'll learn the lesson. But for Amalek is hopeless. And that's actually the words of Rabbi Yon in the Shai Tshuva. He says that someone who is a scoffer, that he's not able to hear any kind of a criticism or critique, no matter what you say, no matter how much you shake him up, that kind of a late, that kind of a person who thinks he's always right, and the whole world and anything that happens in the world and anything is all insignificant. The only thing that's significant is his worldview, which is kind of a Amalek's worldview. That person is hopeless. As long as he has that mindset, there's no way that anything's going to shake him up. And this was what Amalek was. This was the defining characteristic of Amalek. That Amalek was late. He was a scoffer. There was nothing weighty in this world. He made light of everything. Now, the truth of the matter is that this philosophy, if we can say, of Amalek is diametrically opposed, is the exact opposite of the worldview of the Torah. Now, let me explain why it is that way. We know that our sages tell us that this concept that everything that Hashem created in the world, Hashem created in order that lichavodo, he created it for his, we mentioned this in the past, but this is such a central idea. We have to keep on trying to access it. It's a very difficult idea, but a very central idea. Everything Hashem created the world was lichvodo, was for his honor. That doesn't mean it's for his honor, meaning that Hashem enjoys when people, admire him, as people sometimes enjoy it. Obviously, that would be lowering Hashem to human emotions, and that's obviously not what it means. What it really means is the following. This was once brought out to me. I like to share with you this. I don't remember if I've shared this before. Many years ago, I had a correspondence with someone who was a relative of mine, a relative of mine who unfortunately wasn't brought up in a home where he was taught Torah values or Torah ideas, and he wasn't taught about belief in God. And I was having a discussion with him about belief in God, belief in Hashem, and it occurred to me in that discussion that there was the way he was looking at the question and the way I was looking at the question was entirely different. Instead of, besides what the answer is, even what the question is, was entirely different. I think he was looking at it, well, you look at the world and here's this world. And the world is, there's all sorts of things in the world and everything. And now there's a question, is there another resident, so to speak, of this world? Is there a God in this world? The world is for sure here. And the question is God also here? I think that's the way he was looking at the question. And most people who unfortunately don't have belief in Hashem as part of their belief system necessarily would maybe look at the question that way. But I realized that really the question is much deeper than that. It's much more fundamental than that. It's not a question, there's a world and is God in the world too. But the question is, what is the nature of this world? What is this world? And I think that there are two diametrically opposed ways of viewing what our world is altogether. And I would like to say, and I think this is correct, that these two ways are represented by a Amalek on one side and by the Jewish people on the other side. And the worldview of the Jewish people is the idea that this world is, like we say every time in Kedusha, Melol Chol Haaretz Kivodom. The world is full of Hashem's kavod. Now, kavod, we translate honor, glory. The truth of the matter is that, as some of you may have heard, but I think it's absolutely correct, that the word kavod is related grammatically to the word kaved. Kaved means heavy. Heavy. And what Melocha La'aretz Kavodo means is that the entire world is full, heavy is the exact opposite of making light. Right? Heavy means that the world is full of Hashem. What does that mean? Hashem's heaviness. The world of Hashem's is full of Hashem's heaviness means that every single atom, every single iota, every single blade of grass, every single anything, every single thing in the universe is infinitely weighty and important. And why? How do we know that it's infinitely weighty and important? Because an infinitely weighty and important God created it. So everything is full as much as we possibly can fathom of importance and weight. And the world was created in order for us to discover that importance and weight. Because Hashem, as we know, the world, Hashem hid himself in the world. Hashem, even the world itself, the word world, Olam itself means hidden. So what Hashem did was he created a world that's full of the most important and meaningful and purposeful things that could possibly be, because Hashem created them, but it's hiding under a facade, under a smoke screen that makes it look that it's like it's insignificant and there's nothing really important there. We can get involved in things that emphasize those, the lack of importance of things, or we can use the world in a way that uncovers their infinite importance. And that's what the world is about, and that's what our life is about. And that's what a Torah life is about. Ultimately, it's uncovering the kavodo. It's uncovering the weightiness of every single thing in the world by using it in the way that Hashem has revealed to us in our Torah. That is the Torah view of the world. And Amalek's view on the world is the exact opposite. It's instead of Melol Chol Haaretz Kavodo, the whole world being full of weightiness, of kaved, of kavod, the whole world is full of lightness. Of, and I think we can say randomness. I think we may have spoken about this last year. I don't remember. The world, the Amalek stands for the fact that there is nothing weighty in this world. The Torah tells us there is nothing that's not infinitely weighty in this world. And Amalek says that there's nothing that has any real weight. Nothing is really important in this world, which is the exact opposite of the Torah. And that's what I think what Asher Karcha Badarach means. This word Karcha, Mikra, this word happenstance, the connotation is randomness. Amalek, perhaps it means that Amalek didn't even plan this. He just randomly, so to speak, came across us. But that's what Amalek was all about. Amalek represents the philosophy that all is random, and therefore the sea could split, the templates can happen, the sky can open up, and the glory and the weightiness of Hashem could be manifest to every single other individual in this world, except for Amalek. Because Amalek is stuck on his philosophy that there is nothing that's important enough to catch my attention, to jar me away from my view of the world as everything being random. That's what Amalek is. And that's what Haman was about also. And I don't remember if I mentioned in this venue last year that this is I saw that somebody explained that along these lines, that's why the holiday is called Purim. Purim is drawing lots. Haman, he drew lots to determine when to destroy the Jewish people. What's the significance of the lots? So the idea of lots, of lots is, it's basically the most random way of making a decision. You draw lots and there's nothing. There's no reason why it's this day any more than that day. There's no rhyme or reason to it. It's random. And Haman chose to use lots because that is the embodiment of the way Haman looked at everything. Everything was random. And therefore, the epitome of the expression of making a decision based on randomness is a lottery. And that's why when the Jewish people were victorious over Haman and victorious over Amalek and victorious over the randomness, so we say that that his lots were flipped over to us, meaning that the exact opposite became shown through the miracle of Purim, which is not that everything is random, but exactly the opposite. Nothing is random. Every single thing that happens in this world, every single thing that is in this world is under the guidance and under the influence of the infinitely non-random, the infinitely weighty control of the creator of the universe. And that's why everything revolves around this idea of the goral of the lots, which is the randomness. And that's why Amalek is not going to have any can't last in the future. That's why we have to destroy Amalek. First of all, that's why we have to be so, we have to remember what Amalek did to us. I think part of it is also, we said, what was it that Amalek did that was so terrible? And the answer is that what Amalek did was, it wasn't the fact that they attacked the Jewish people. Maybe some people were wounded. That itself was not the point. I mean, according to this understanding, at least. The point is that Amalek, by what they did, they poisoned the world of ideas. They injected the idea of randomness into this world. Nobody else was able, like Rashi brings the famous muscle from the sages of this boiling hot bathtub that nobody wanted to jump into. And then this fellow goes and jumps in, and even though he gets burnt, but he cools it off everyone else. So Rashi says that was Amalek, because there was this boiling bath, meaning when the Jewish people left Egypt, the world had to take notice that there's something, the Kvod Shemayim, the glory, the weightiness of Hashem was open for everyone to see, and everyone was scared to touch the Jewish people. Everyone at least we're going to get out of their way because they realized that they represented the most important and weighty thing possible. And that's what everybody recognized. And then Amalek came and they said, and they jumped into the boiling bathtub. What does that mean? The Amalek came and said, what? Weighty. Random. Karcha baderech. Random. It doesn't make any sense, but doesn't have to make sense. In their worldview, they just hold on to this concept of things not being important and randomness, and they poison the whole world's atmosphere. That's what it says, that Hashem's kisei, Hashem's throne, will not be complete as long as Amalek is in this world. What's the idea? Hashem's throne won't be complete because Hashem's throne, that represents the throne of glory, the kisei hakavod. That represents Hashem, the idea of everybody recognizing the infinite importance and weightiness of everything in this world as being a manifestation of the will of Hashem. And that is, as long as Amalek is still in this world, that there's going to be, that perception is not going to be complete. because they poison the atmosphere in this world to the point that people cannot perceive in its completion the idea of the kavod, of the glory of Hashem, because there's always this little amalek in the background saying, random, random, random. You think it's important? No, random. And that's always in there. It's in the world, and it's also inside of ourselves. It poisoned ourselves. Amalek did that to us. And that's something that's unforgivable. It's literally unforgivable, because it undermines the entire purpose of the world, really. The entire purpose of the world, which is to uncover the Malach HaLaretz Kavodo, to uncover the Kavod of Hashem that fills the world. And that, I think, getting back to the Pasha, I think that that's really the one of the most basic ways of understanding the purpose of the Mishkan, the Mikdash. We want to know what is a Mikdash, what is a sanctuary. So I think on the really, really very fundamental and basic level, but it's something which we really have to internalize. The idea of a Mishkan is to make this building with all of these beautiful and glorious kinds of materials, the gold and the silver and the different colored wool and everything, and take all of that beauty and all of that glory and harness it to be totally and completely a reflection of the glory of Hashem, and to have a place that when you go into that place, the feeling that's elicited by the atmosphere and the environment, and it needs to have all of those beautiful and glorious physical things, because we're physical human beings, and that's what that affects of our emotions. But when we go into that place, that's going to be a place that the feeling that overwhelms a person is the whole world is full of its glory. And the Mishkan, as the commentaries explain, is actually a microcosm of the world. Everything that's in the Mishkan, everything that's in the world is represented in the Mishkan. So when a person goes into the Mishkan and is able to perceive as it's like as if he's coming into this miniature world. And what is this world? This world is just about Hashem. And it's just about Hashem's plan for it. And everything that's in it, whether it's the shulchan, the table, which is bread, which represents the physical things and the wealth of things, or whether it's the menorah that represents the wisdom that there is in this world, and all these other all the other parts of the things, whether it's the animals that are brought on the mizbech, but everything that's in there, all of it is you can feel, it's palpable, this idea that everything in this world is infinitely meaningful because it's a reflection of Hashem's plan and Hashem's wisdom and Hashem's vision for the world. And that's what the Mishkan is for, and that's what it represents. And that's what our today we don't have a Mishkan, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, but that's really the purpose of our Batei Knesiyos, Batei Midrashos, our shuls and our places of learning Torah, and they're places that are supposed to, and as much as we put into it, that's how much we get out of it. But it's supposed to be places that have, that play that role for us in our lives. And that role is so central. We want to know why the Torah devotes so much space to it. It's simple. According to this, it's not a question at all. There's nothing that's more central and essential and fundamental and important to what the Torah is trying to teach us than this idea, than the idea of Malach HaLaretz Kavodo, of the whole world being full of the Kavod of Hashem. And that's what the Mishkan is for. And that's what all these parashas are about. So I think that kind of ties together the message of the parasha of the Mishkan, and also the message of Amalek, and why we can't forgive the ones who poisoned us with this idea that the world is somehow not so important, because that's so diametrically opposed, and that's what the remembering of Amalek is about. And that's part of what we celebrate on Purim. Be'ez Hashem, maybe next week we'll talk more about Purim still. We'll still have a little more time. So everyone, thank you all very much, and have a